Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. If you have any story tips or feedback for me, paul.yeager@iowapbs.org is my email. Would love to hear from you. Would love for you to tell a friend that you're listening to this discussion about the state of Montana. They're facing three big things in the livestock industry: the weather, the governmental issues of packer regulations, the packers and stockyards, as well as cool country of origin labeling, and grasshoppers. How do those three impact the livestock industry? Mike Honeycutt, who is in the state office, that is the head of the Department of Livestock in the state of Montana. You'll enjoy what you'll see behind him on his wall. We'll find out about some of the other accoutrements of the office there in Helena. But really, we're going to focus on the weather, how June was extremely dry, and what that means for both near-term and long-term problems for the state. Wildfires, what that's doing to the industry, the liquidation of some herds, and a startling stat when it comes to what animals are going to the feed yard or to the sale barns as they head towards the east. That's in today's MTOM podcast. Enjoy. North Carolina, Indiana, Montana. You could not get three more different types of weather. Which one do you like the best? Hot and humid? Even hotter and not as humid? Or the beauty of Montana?
Well, obviously, Paul, the beauty of Montana wins out. That's where I am now and probably where I'm going to stay. But I certainly have a love for my home state and every place I've had the pleasure to live here in the United States.
So the home state is North Carolina?
That is correct. I am a native of North Carolina.
So does the Southern accent throw people off in the West?
Quite often the Southern accent will throw people off. I just tell people I'm from Southern Montana and try to get a giggle out of it, but people pick it out pretty quickly.
So tell me about life in North Carolina. Where are you from?
I'm originally from Eastern North Carolina. I grew up between the Raleigh-Durham area and the coast. In a rural area near a town called Benson, North Carolina, so a large tobacco producing area, swine, poultry, cotton, those types of commodities. Not the things that you find where I live now in Montana.
But that is a good background and knowledge base for wherever you move, right?
It is. It is. Agriculture is a very common industry, and a lot of the learnings that you have in the different areas, transcend and carry over. I've had that pleasure to sort of work in southeastern agriculture and then for 12 years in Indiana to work and be around Midwestern agriculture. And now, for the last 5-6 years working with Western agriculture, it just provides a great diversity of experience.
We're going to talk about Indiana, or do we need to skip Indiana? I missed that. Tell me about your time in Indiana. That's a joke on Indiana. Sorry.
Oh, a joke on Indiana. Okay, got it. Well, yes, I spent 12 years actually in central Indiana. Went there to work with the National Future Farmers of America organization at their headquarters. Spent some time working with Cargill there in central Indiana. Just a wonderful place. Lots of friends in agriculture there. A really welcoming agricultural community. Was able to be very involved with Farm Bureau in the state, and so a lot of great lessons that I still learn and use from my friends and my time in Indiana.
I don't see the FFA coat hanging up in your office. Is it just off camera?
Oh no, don't have it hanging up in the office. I actually prefer to have the skull there in the background.
That's even better. The livestock industry is what you're doing now in Montana. So is your office in the state in the state legislative, state government? How is it? Where does it sit? Tell me the story of your office now.
Yeah, so the Montana Department of Livestock is an executive branch agency here within the state of Montana. We're like a few states. We have a separate Department of Agriculture and a Department of Livestock. The roots of our department's history comes from the territorial government, the original livestock agents and investigators that were put on to try and deal with the cattle rustling issue that was very prevalent in this part of the world in the 1870s, 1880s. So we're proud of the fact that our agency actually predates statehood in Montana. We've officially been in existence since 1885. And today our mission is more diverse, but there's still a lot of that history there, dealing with livestock theft and fraud, oversight of markets and dealers, the animal health mission, disease control, you know, working with the veterinarians around the state and doing some predator control activities and protecting our producers that way.
Or in current times, drought conditions and how animals are being impacted by the weather. What's the mission of the office when it comes to drought?
Yeah, primarily we're trying to see whatever type of response that we can put forward. My position is lucky to be a part of the governor's Drought and Water Supply Advisory Committee. So I try to be a conduit for our producers into that committee with the other types of resource planners we have in Montana. Obviously, when it comes to water, we're worried about fisheries, we're worried about fire, you know, worried about the overall landscape. And so I get to be a voice of ranchers in that conversation to make sure we're considering what types of emergency declarations and relief packages we need to put forward at the state, how we need to be moving forward to drought monitor, to get the secretarial designations that we need to unleash the flow of federal help for our producers. And also just being in an advising role of trying to help producers who need to be moving livestock to find better conditions or worried about the animal welfare issues that come with these types of issues that we're dealing with on the landscape right now.
Is this the worst drought Montana's had since? ...
Yeah, anecdotally, I'm hearing it's the worst drought since 1988. 1988, I think, is a benchmark year for a lot of ag producers, not just in Montana, as you have sort of a widespread drought across most of the country. And, of course, that's what we're seeing in the West. There are certainly places in the West that are worse than us right now, which is hard to imagine. Empirically, when you look at the numbers, we just came off the driest or one of the driest, if not driest, June in the recorded history of Montana. And June is typically our wettest month. And we're now headed into what is typically our driest period in July and August and September. So there's a lot of reason for concern.
A dry June when it's supposed to be wet, but a wet June isn't supremely wet. It's all about what your baseline is. So, I mean, are we talking half of what you would normally get in the month? 80% of what you'd get in a normal June didn't fall?
I would say it's 1-2% of what we would get in a normal June is what we had. We had lots of areas around the state that, you know, come pretty close to recording no precipitation at all within that 30-day period.
What's that mean? Does that just heighten the concern for producers now?
Yes, it does. And primarily because you always have compounding issues. You know, one of the things we dealt with in May was we actually sort of had a very late freeze and very quick snowfall. And so that really hurt a lot of our germinating crops, getting out of the ground. For our crops that, you know, we're looking at our forage crops or winter wheat and things that we were looking to get started, they obviously got delayed by that cold snap. And then you come into June when you expect to have some precipitation and you expect to have moderate temperatures, not 100, 105 degrees, you know, like we've been seeing. And so a lot of those crops just got off to a bad start, slow growth. And so it's put our forage situation in a pretty dire spot as we head towards the rest of summer, just because we either didn't get those crops out of the ground or we didn't get those crops off to the start coming out of winter that we wanted to.
And I would assume pasture conditions are poor right now.
Yes, our range conditions are poor across the state. That's been compounded by an outbreak with grasshoppers that we've been dealing with. A lot of other states in the West are dealing with that. That's probably the worst it's been in a decade or more. And so, you know, not the fact you've got the compounding issues of having dryness and poor conditions there. And then what does come out of the ground, you're dealing with that, unbelievable pest pressure on top of it.
And I think you said that pressure was there last year, too?
Yes, we had a bad grasshopper last year, and then, of course, followed by, you know, what by our standards is a mild winter. Then the hot, dry conditions we've experienced this year has just caused an explosion in those populations.
When you say mild by comparison, I mean, do you need several days below zero, below freezing to kind of freeze off these pests like we do?
Well, yes. Typically, we get some very, very cold temperatures a few times through the winter. The other thing we get is good snow cover. And in a lot of areas of the state, we didn't get very good snow cover. We got good snow in the mountains at high elevations, but down on the plains in the central and eastern part of the state, we just didn't have the amount of snow cover we might typically have in some lower elevation situations.
So this drought situation was set up before we got to 2021 by a bad, I won't say bad winter, but a less than average winter. How was 2020 for you in terms of weather and dry conditions?
Yes, 2020 was a drier than normal year also in some areas of the state. Last year was a little bit more spotty. We had some areas that, you know, would be called garden spots maybe, but we had some areas, of, particularly in eastern Montana, that had a dry year just like we're experiencing this year. So, you know, that also causes our subsoil moisture and those types of things were a challenge. As we talked about for the winter, that lack of snow cover with the wind we have also causes a lot of evapotranspiration. So that hurts our subsoil moistures. And so our starting level, 2020 did not help us at all with our starting levels in most of the state. And really, you know, we've been in a cycle that started with the flash drought that we dealt with a couple of years ago, where, you know, we had a really severe late summer drought, and we never really quite recovered to moisture levels from that we would expect.
So what's that mean for livestock? Flash droughts, patterns of months, if not years, what's that set you up for?
Yeah, it sets us up for a pretty, you know, dire situation in terms of the types of choices that livestock producers are going to have to make. The things that I think are ahead of us looking at the rest of summer, obviously with what's going on all across the West, normally we would count on others to have a little bit of hay to help us and there'd be some supply, but other states are dealing with the same or worse conditions that we're dealing with. So we're seeing extremely high hay prices, approaching $300 a ton on some bids, which makes it difficult. So we have poor range conditions. Supplemental feeding is going to be extremely expensive. And so the choices I think that are setting up for our producers are certainly some decisions about maybe early weaning and selling earlier at lighter weights if they can find bids. As most of us know, the commodity prices for feedlots is a challenge right now too. So the cost to gain is high. So, you know, people's ability to do that might be hampered. We may see some actual true culling of the herd, selling of bred animals or younger breeding animals to try and reduce how much you have to carry through the winter to see if you can make it with the resources that you have. One story I would share that came from a producer in one area of the state that sets up, I think, the types of choices are having to be made. He had a reservoir that normally would supply water for both his cows and enough water to irrigate his alfalfa crop. This year he had to make the choice of whether he saved the alfalfa or saved the cows. And that's the types of choices that are being made.
What choice did he make?
He saved the cows. That's typically what our ranchers would do. I think economists might say you would have saved the hay given some of the things that I said earlier, but I think most of our ranchers, their first obligation is to their animals and trying to keep those animals on the landscape and keep them healthy.
What are we talking about for number of ranchers, number of cattle in your state?
Yeah, as far as the number of ranchers, it numbers in around 10 to 15,000, individual ranchers that operate around the state. We typically carry a cow-calf inventory on an annual basis of just north of 3 million. And so we typically have about 1.8, 1.9 breeding animals out there on the landscape. Certainly that is, twice as many animals as there are people in the state of Montana, because we are a population of only 1 million. And so the cattle industry makes up, particularly our rural economy, makes up a very large piece of that economy and the fabric of those communities.
And when you hear or when you tell the stories about what producers are going through, I mean, what's our percentage of reduction on that 3 million and 1.9 million? What's that looking like this year?
You know, it's really hard to tell right now. Our inventory numbers, we do a process where we collect an inventory that's mainly on the breeding animals that comes in every February. We actually, this February, that inventory was higher than normal by about 100,000 head. We believe that's some latent COVID impacts where people didn't have marketing options or didn't like the marketing options they had and decided to carry a few animals over the winter into this year to see if they could find better conditions. Certainly carrying a higher inventory into the situation that we're in is difficult. So I think it's going to be some time before we're able to maybe parse the numbers and tell exactly what's happening, because we do have to get through that backlog of inventory before we can get to a normal. But certainly the things that we're watching for in the sales that we're working around the state is looking for breeding animals and bred animals, you know, being marketed at typically, you know, in higher numbers than they typically would be, because that would be a signal of a contraction. But, you know, individual producers, it's going to be hard to make that choice. But, you know, we could see retractions statewide of 5%, maybe 10%. You know, I don't want to overstate it until we can really get to a normal place in our inventory, which we haven't seen for a while.
Well, and it's that hard comparison. You know, we look at the economy, the inflation number came out this week, and it's, you know, highest in 13 years, but we're comparing year over year, not month over month. And when you compare year over year, you have to, it's like we all have to go back to 2019. Is that kind of what you're going to have to do as well?
Yes, I think so. And the other thing is we were looking at an industry that is in a little bit of a staged contraction. I think we were very well aware that all the forecasts, as our producers have gotten more efficient, is that we are producing more meat with less animals. So, and we were coming off sort of a high in our inventory at the middle of the last decade anyway. The last time we dealt with something like this was the early part of last decade with the droughts that we saw across the West and in the Midwest, and saw high commodity prices. So we saw some contraction, you know, 8-9 years ago in the industry, and the industry had just sort of come out of that. But there's always a little bit of natural contraction, I think, that's happening as the industry gets more efficient with how it's producing animals.
Do you get concerned when you do see that younger animal is going to the sale barn? Maybe not the one that's older, but I think you kind of talked about it the other day when we chatted. That inventory that's lighter and smaller, is that the number you look at first when you get reports?
Well, that's the number that sometimes is more prevalent to us. We are a gross export state. Most of our animals are raised in the cow-calf environment and exported to feedlots in the Midwest and then on through the processing channels from there. And so typically we see a lot of animals move in the fall. That's the big time of year. We call it the fall run. So my anticipation is that fall run potentially will shape up to be more of a late summer run. So where people might want to sell those animals at 700 or 800 pounds down later on in the year, we might be trying to see them sell them at 400, 500, and 600 weights. That doesn't trouble me as much, because those animals would typically get marketed anyway. They would just get marketed later in the year. That's why I think we look at the breeding animals, bred and breeding animals, as really the true sign that would show us that people are culling animals that will have a long-term impact on their inventory moving into future years versus the calves that typically get marketed out of Montana in large numbers every year.
So if those that inventory is headed east, is almost everything going east? Because to the west, there's really not much of a better situation when you get to Washington and Oregon and California. I mean, they're dry too. I don't think there's anybody there wanting to expand a herd.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as, you know, obviously with our animals that are going into the feeding channel, the east is always, because that's where the feedlots are, is really where we see everything go. We've been seeing more competition out of Alberta and Saskatchewan and seeing more animals heading north from here across the Canadian border. As far as the market for the breeding animals, you know, that is all over the Western United States. And that is the challenge. If you're trying to sell, say, a group of bred heifers because you're trying to lighten your cow inventory moving forward in the future years, because of what we're seeing across the West, finding someone who is looking to expand their herd and take on more, breeding cows into their herd is a challenge here. And so that you would think that the West or the East would be maybe the opportunity for better markets there. But certainly we know Texas, Oklahoma, lots of other places are dealing with very similar challenges. I mean, you have to go pretty much all the way to the Mississippi River to find improving conditions.
It sounds like 2020, the cattle producer was acting like the grain producer of, I'll just put it in the bin and forget it. We kept the lots full. The animals got heavier. We had more animals to feed. There was a little bit of a gamble. And I think you told me it was kind of the 1-2 punch. Normally that'd be a good decision, right? I mean, to hold and hope for a better day. But you got hit with that other whammy.
Yeah, that's certainly what we saw last year. So, you know, the impacts of COVID on the supply chain and how that backed up out of processing plants into feedlots, reduced placements in feedlots, reduced bids that people were getting for the calves that they maybe wanted to market. Yeah, we had stories last year of people who were having sales canceled because there just wasn't a place for those animals to go. Or people were putting animals out for bid, and just, you know, there was no way that they felt comfortable with the types of bids they were getting and what they would have to sell animals for. So as you said, they probably made what looked at the time like a wise choice that this too shall pass, and I can make a little bit of an investment in these animals, sell them at higher weights next year, hold them over as yearlings, maybe even feed a few more out myself and try to find a market for them locally, with buyers that I can establish my community. And so that is the 1-2 punch is now you carry that heavier inventory into this year and you have to know that markets look a little bit better. So now you've sank a little bit more cost into that animal. And if the bids are not looking better, or if the cost to continue feeding those animals is continuing to get higher, you could be looking at a bad situation. As you said, it's kind of like in the grain world, the farmer that has a crop in the bin because just was not satisfied with the market that he was given at the time. But now the bins are full and you're getting ready to harvest another crop. And so there's only so much space. And so things have to go somewhere. They have to move at a certain point.
What about wildfires and that impact? That sounds like it's a third thing that you have to deal with. Is how big of a problem is that in Montana, and what is the impact on herds?
Wildland fire is a huge issue for us, and it's an annualized issue for us. But we have seen a lot more fire pressure in the last few years. As far as the impact to the cattle industry, obviously one of the things that we've had a concern with is when we think about wildland fire, a lot of people think about the mountains, but some of our biggest fires have been in central and eastern Montana, out on the plains and on the grasslands. And when these fires get started in, these sort of very hot, dry conditions, with the types of winds that we see, they can move far and fast, moving 10, 15, 20, 30 miles in a day sometimes, being wind driven. And so that puts a lot of pressure on producers to try and get their cattle out of the way of those fires. And then on the back end of that, you have burned out fences that have to be replaced, other structures, corrals, potentially even, working structures or homes for those people who are living there. That were in the way of those fires. And so that has a tremendous, tremendous impact. And then, of course, you for a couple of years, you have to have recovery on the range from that fire. I think we all know the benefits of fire, but the immediate impacts after fire means that you may not really have good, suitable range where that fire went through, at least for a year or two as it recovers. And so that's a significant challenge that we have to deal with. And this year will be no different. We've been very lucky so far. We've had hundreds of fire starts across Montana. Our volunteer firefighters, our local and state wildland fire agencies, and our federal agencies have done a good job of getting on those very, very quickly so that we've not had as many big fires. But we certainly have several more months of fire season to go.
So you're dealing with fires. And if once that's done burning, there's no moisture to start that rebuild process of the pasture. Producers dealing with grasshoppers, lack of water. I do want to take my animal to the packer, but the margin's not real good. What's the packer margin story from where you sit? What is something I need to know about the margin when I go to the packer door, if that's where my animal's headed?
Yeah, certainly that's one of the things that we're seeing is negative margins for some of our feeders and some of our cow-calf operations. It has improved recently to where you're seeing some positive margins, upwards maybe of occasionally approaching, for our feeders, approaching $100 a head potentially. Certainly nothing like what we're seeing on the other side, on the retail side, coming out of our processors, the actual margins that they're seeing per animal, you know, which have been from $500 to $1,000 a head. But for a while there, we had some real challenges with those being zero or negative margins. We've seen some improvement in that in the markets. When there were bids to be had, that's the other thing. Some of the trade has been light at times or been spotty at times. But that's one of the things that really concerns a lot of producers in Montana, especially us being such a large, cow-calf state. Is that disparity between, what we see beef selling for in the grocery store versus the margin they're getting on those animals that they're marketing. That is a really big issue in Montana.
We could not talk yesterday. You had to take a phone call or a Zoom with a couple of United States senators that have been involved in some bills impacting the livestock industry, Senator Tester from your state, Senator Grassley from the state I live in, Iowa. What are they telling you? What's the conversation about? You got a lot of issues. So what's the most pressing one with those two?
Well, obviously what's going on right now, coming from a federal level and the president's executive order on anti-competition practices and trying to sort that out. That has long been a bipartisan issue in the livestock industry, as evidenced by the fact that you have Senator Tester and Senator Grassley, who have been working very close together on that issue for quite some time. And, the biggest issues, I think, for us in Montana and what our producers want to see out of that effort is to see some strengthening and real enforcement from the Packers and Stockyards Act to make sure that they're being treated fairly. They do want to see investigations into the procurement practices that are being used in the livestock industry to make sure that there's not monopolistic and collusion type activities that are happening that are putting them at a disadvantage. And they want to see money invested in trying to diversify that system to give producers more options and increase competition in the system. And so it was good to hear, what they want to do with the Packers and Stockyards Act. I think that's a very welcome story here in Montana. The fact that they're wanting to invest millions of dollars in trying to diversify the meat processing industry, to get more players into the meat processing industry, to bring competition into the bidding at those sale barns and out on the internet and in those private treaty sales. Those are the things that, our producers are pretty unified, regardless of what other beliefs they may have, about the fact that there is work to be done to increase that competition in livestock marketing and livestock processing. And I shouldn't also forget that here for Montana, a big issue is the product of USA labeling. And that was part of what USDA is being asked to look into and to make sure that product of USA label means what it says and that for consumers, they can have confidence that they're buying a U.S. product and that we're preserving the power of that USA beef brand for our producers as their product goes through the supply chain.
Well, you're one of those states that does border Canada, and there's, like many places that border another, whether it's in Texas and Mexico, a lot of stuff does hop back over from one border to the other. How does that impact with what you're talking about, and whether it's labeling or competition on those two fronts?
Yeah, we do have a lot of Canadian cattle that come down through the West. We don't have a lot of processing capacity in Montana, but, you know, when we look at Idaho and Utah and Colorado, states to our south, we, you know, I get to see that as I drive up and down I-15, which goes from Salt Lake all the way up to the, you know, Canadian border. I see lots of trucks from Canada hauling, you know, fat cattle south for processing. And of course, the advantage of that is by having that slaughter and that processing take place in the U.S., those animals do get the benefit of the product of USA label. And I think a lot of our producers see that, and that's where a lot of their concerns come from. But, you know, there's pros and cons with everything. On the other side, I see those trucks going back north, backhauled with a lot of feeder cattle coming out of sales from the states here in this sort of northern part of the Intermountain West that border cattle in Canada. And so we've seen Canada become more of a player in our market to try and source feeder cattle from here because of shortages they have for good feeder cattle in Alberta and Saskatchewan.
I want to go. So Cool was covered a little bit. There was some of those executive orders, and we talked about packers and stockyards. Do you think the executive orders are going to be enough, or are you going to need some sharper teeth than current legislation, or new teeth in, or a new bite in a new piece of legislation that can help either of those two issues that we've talked about?
Well, I think, you know, and maybe strange to find an agent of the government who would say this, but, you know, my first philosophy is not to look for new regulation first, but to look for how we better enforce the regulations we actually have. Because sometimes the problem is not a lack of regulatory language or regulation. The real problem is the lack of enforcement or the lack of resources to actually undertake that enforcement. And so, you know, I like the concept that we're gonna try to do better with the enforcement of packers and stockyards and make sure that the folks are doing their job. You know, the announcement of putting special investigators in that would take a look and have this as a part of their full-time job to just look at these types of practices, I think is a good sign. But I do think, you know, there's going to need to be some congressional legislative activity to really make this stick. This is not a new story. We've heard these things before. We've heard there was going to be an investigation. We heard this is being looked into, and we see those things stall. We've seen a number of acts get introduced in Congress that those of us in the industry thought would be positive on these particular issues, you know, only to see them stall and never get to the finish line. You know, in the meat processing industry, I think some of the ideas that have been very popular among producers in Montana is the concept of allowing our state-inspected meat facilities. We do have a state inspection program here in Montana that operates equal to USDA Food Safety Inspection Service. You know, we can govern what happens inside our state. We'd like to see the folks who are a part of our program be able to market their product across state lines because they are equal to USDA standards. To give them more marketing options, maybe to put some more capital to grow and expand, which then helps the rancher because now the rancher has another option of where they can sell and market cattle. And it adds jobs to communities, it adds revenue, and it adds tax base. So these are all things we're looking for. And those ideas are there. They're in Congress right now. The question is whether they can get a priority and actually some of those ideas get across the finish line.
All right, you got to pick up one of your children as your favorite. So which one is the biggest priority for Montana producers? Is it the origin labeling? Is it packers and stockyard? Or is it weather right now as we sit here in July of 2021?
Well, I would say that weather is number one, and because weather has the most immediate impact. You know, that's what's making us have to have tough choices now. Those other issues are important. They've been there for years. I'm sure that in some way, shape, or form, they'll continue to be there. But those issues won't matter if we don't make it through this upcoming season and if we don't make the right choices and people be able to stay in business and keep their operations viable moving forward. So I think weather is going to really have everybody's focus you know, moving forward until we see some sort of improving conditions, which at least for us seems to be several months off at best.
All right, I'll finish with this on the consumer side. If I am a consumer in any grocery store around this country, why does what happens in Montana matter to me?
Well, I think, you know, largely it's because all of us have to eat. All of us need food. And we know what happens out here in Montana in terms of this drought and what in terms of maybe contracting a cattle herd, that is inevitably going to have an impact on the price that all of our consumers pay. And that's going to have an impact on how much of your dollar you can use for the other things that you need to do in your life and reduce that disposable income. I mean, it's not an overstated fact that in America, we enjoy a great benefit by not spending a large amount of our money on food. It allows us to do lots of other things and have a great lifestyle. But the types of situations we're dealing with now will stress that. We will see prices increase, and that will reduce the buying power of that dollar for every American. And so that's how that impact extrapolates out on the entire population and not just farmers and ranchers.
Mike, how did you get that skull behind you? Where'd that come from?
Well, you know, that's been here for a long time, I wish I knew the story on it. We have lots of things hanging around the office here. I probably should have chose to put a hide. We have a hide behind us that is one of the best representations of misbranding and cattle theft. And there's actually a whole story behind that hide and the investigation that took place. That would have probably been a better piece for me. It's out in the hallway, though. I'd have had to do the interview there, so I didn't want to do that. But we have lots of things around here that just over the years our employees have collected and gathered and found a home for here that just adds a little bit of color to our workplace every day.
And a good reminder of what you're there for to do.
Absolutely. It's a great reminder. And as I sit here, I look across. I actually see a long picture that's on the other wall across from me that was taken probably 10 or 20 years ago at that time with all of the livestock agents in the department on horseback. Those are all things that kind of keep you grounded in who's here working for us and who we're working for and trying to provide this service to.
Mike, I appreciate all the time and the insight of what's happening in your state, and I hope the norms of the weather pattern change for you sooner than later.
Absolutely. I'm hoping so too. We do see some signals in a couple of months of a changing weather pattern that has some hope for winter, that we'll actually see a good precipitation this winter. And like everybody who works in this industry, we're going to be hopeful and prayerful and fight for another season.
The ever optimist, the American agriculture worker. All right, Mike Honeycutt, thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul.
My thanks to Mike Honeycutt. If you have any feedback on this episode or any others, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thank you so very much for finding and enjoying, hopefully, our little corner of the internet.